Okay, so we are in Perek Chav Gimel, chapter 23. We're wrapping it up. We did most of it last time, a little bit the time before, where this was the last of that set of 10 enemies who are for whom Yeshaya predicts their downfall. We talked about what exactly is wrong with Sor, with Tyre. What is it that we're so angry about? We talked about the mixed relationship that the Jews had with Tzor. On the one hand, good allies. Hiram Melech Tzor is an ally of David, and then an ally of Shlomo, building the first Beis Hamikdash. And then on the other hand, Sidon, which we associate closely with Tzor, is the source of Izebel, and then the source of, through Izebel, Atalia, two queens who were extremely problematic. I mean, if, you know, bloodshed, murder counts as problematic, then yes. But we didn't have a clear statement of what they did wrong to us. We noted other Nevi'im, other prophets who speak of some kind of betrayal by them. Were they selling our youths into captivity? Did they sell us out to Edom at the end of the second Beis HaMikdash? But based on Yoel, based on Yechezkel, and I think based on what we see here, really the main issue is a criticism of the commerce of Sidon, and really a message to us not to rely on them for their commercial success. But as we're going to say now, there is a critique here of commerce in general. So if you have the sheets... Actually, before the sheets, Perek Chav Gimel, chapter 23, is on page 991 in the Stone Tanakh. I feel like a lot of this, what's going on in chapter 23, is a statement about the seafaring economy as a whole. So we've already noted it's not just Tzor, right? So in the beginning of the Perek, we had in Pasuk Aleph, and then again in Pasuk Vav, we had Oniyot Tarshish, the boats of Tarshish. We talked about that. We had Yoshvei Ai, the dwellers of the island, is what it sounded like, also in the second Pasuk, and then again in Pasuk Vav. Then you had Socher Sidon, the Sidonim, in the second and fourth Pasuk. And you had Egypt in the third and fifth Pasuk. So that the entire seafaring economy collapses when Tzor suffers. Side note here, I'll throw it in because I've mentioned already Tzor and Sidon and their association. It's unclear exactly what the relationship is here. Rashi paints it as dependent on each other. If you take a look at source number one, because the text described Sidon as part of this and said, Domu Yoshvei Socher Sidon, you should be silent, those who dwell in this island, and the merchants of Sidon. And then it continued to say, Over Yam Miluch, the one who travels on the sea will fill you up, or filled you up before, which was not clear in terms of the reference. So Rashi says that this is a statement to the dwellers of the dwellers of the island, that they should be silent because the merchants of Sidon, who used to fill you with merchandise, are going to fall when Tzor falls. Right? That's the way that Rashi reads it in source number one. In other words, Tzor and Sidon go together, and Tzor collapses, Sidon collapses. That's Rashi's explanation. Abarbanel is like that as well. However, Malbim has this very interesting, different take on what's going on. He says, why do you say, be silent to Sidon? He thinks be silent is not talking to the dwellers of but rather be silent is a reference to, or it's addressed to, Sidon. Not specifically E. So he says that what's actually going on is a change in fortunes for Sidon that they don't really anticipate. He says, if you look at my translation here, number two, be silent. He says, Sidon was near Tzor, was near Tyre. And when Tyre was at peace, Sidon, was considered insignificant. Tyre was the major one, Sidon was minor. After Tyre's fall, all of the trade went to Sidon, and she became very wealthy, until she was also destroyed via Nebuchadnezzar. And the text pictures Sidon grieving for Tzor, For Sidon suffered great harm then. When Sor fell, Sidon initially suffered, and they're crying and they're upset. And so the prophet tells them, be silent, dwellers of the islands. Why do you cry for the destruction of Sor? Especially you, merchant of Sidon, why do you cry? Now those who are by the sea will fill you with merchandise, for trade will turn to you, and that which you have lost from Sor will now be filled doubly. So in other words, the reading that Rashi brings to it is that E should be silent. The merchant of Sidon who had taken care of them before, provided them with merchandise, is collapsing along with Sor. However, Malvin says no. He says Sor collapses, and Sidon is crying about it, and the Navi Yeshaya is saying to them, you should stop crying because you're going to do well. Your competitor has fallen. The prophet tells them, be silent, dwellers of the islands, why do you cry for the destruction of Sor? Especially you, merchant of Sidon, why do you cry? Now those who are by the sea will fill you with merchandise. It's going to be great. Trade is going to turn to you. That's the initial idea. However, further along, we're told, Boshi Sidon. Literally, Boshi can mean to be embarrassed, to be ashamed, and Malvim says it that way, saying, but then Yeshaya retracts. And he says, no, don't be silent. Why? Because you start to be happy at the fall of Tsor when you do well. However, in the end, because you do well, the Babylonians are going to come and ruin you. In other words, you thought that it was good, but actually you became large enough that now you are going to be vulnerable. The Assyrians are going to destroy Tsor, Sidon will grow, and the Babylonians will destroy Sidon.
A chain reaction.
You got it. Okay. So, two different ways to read that association between Tsor and Sidon within the context of this prophecy. But the major point that I wanted to get to here is this. The faith in financial success is Yeshaya's target. And it reminds me of the first unit in Yeshaya. Right? This is already our third unit. The first unit in Yeshaya were Prakim Bet to Hay, meaning Aleph was its own creature. That's really its own thing. But Prakim Bet to Hay, and Vav again also is its own creature. But Bet to Hay were the statements to King Uzziahu, who was so wealthy, and the statements to Uzziahu about his self-indulgence, about the indulgence of the nation and their arrogance, and how he thinks he built up Migdalim and built up the land, and they, in their wealth, became arrogant. That's what this feels like. This feels like a throwback to the visions to Uzziahu. Because when you look at what Yeshaya is saying, and especially when you look at it in the context of the other prophecies that we noted, when we read through Amos, read through Yoel, Yechezkel, especially Yoel and Yechezkel, it's all about their greed and all about their arrogance. So I'm not going to go through the Amos part. The Amos part, I think, is less relevant. But let's take a look. I referenced the sources for you in number 3. Yoel Perek Dalet. It is page 1355. Yoel chapter 4. Right? Specifically, the specific lines you want start in Pasuk Hey in sentence 5. You have taken my silver and my gold. You have brought my desirable and good possessions to your palaces. You sold the children of Israel and the children of Jerusalem to the children of the Greeks in order to distance them from their border. The language of their sin and their punishment as well is explicitly commercial, because what is God going to do to them? I will sell your sons and daughters into the hands of the children of Judah. They will sell them to the Sabaeans, to a distant people, etc. The image is a commercial image. And then you jump to Yechezkel, chapter 26, sentence 2. So that is page 1267. where the sin of Tzor, as explained by Radak, is expressed really in two words at the end of sentence two. Imala'a hecharava. Which, as Radak explains, means, I will be filled from the downfall of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is destroyed, and therefore I am going to become wealthy. What they had is going to come to me. That's the way that Radak reads it. And then again, in Perek Chavchet, chapter 28, sentence 5, you find the charge. Through your wisdom and discernment, you have acquired wealth for yourself and amassed gold and silver in your treasuries. Through your abundant wisdom and your commerce, you have increased your wealth. Your heart became proud with your wealth. There's an element of arrogance here. And that's, I think, what Yeshaya is criticizing as well. And in particular, let's go back to Yeshaya now, where we wrap this all together in a bow. So Yeshaya chapter 23, we're back on page 993, the last part of the, well, it's the bottom of 991. That whole last section, starting in Pasuk Ted Vav, starting in sentence 15, really, basically 15 to the end, where he compares who to a zonah. Right? That's the description. Where the merchant who has been forgotten is going to sing to people like the zonah who has been forgotten to try to get them again to be interested. And that's just, it flows right through this section. Talks about her etnan. The etnan being the payment to the zonah. The description of commerce as harlotry. The image of the merchant as somebody who isn't selling merchandise, but who's selling himself. That's really what the image here is. The commerce it's being presented as Zinut. And so you get the description of Shirat HaZonah, the song of the Zonah, when she has been forgotten. I brought you Rashi on the page in number 4, and Ibn Ezra in number 5, about how the Zonah is who has been forgotten sings. But what's particularly striking to me is at the end of this, in sentences 17 and 18, right? After 70 years, Hashem is going to remember Tzor. What is Tzor going to do? Sorry? She goes right back to it. Right? Tzor goes right back to it, but Haya sachara ve'esnana kodesh l'Hashem, right? Something from what she has is going to become sacred to God. I'm going to come back to that in a moment. But she's still a zonah. She still has the etnan. Tzor remains who she always was. It's an image of disgrace. And what it's doing here is saying that that you look at commerce and you look at the successful merchant nation of Tyre as some kind of not only ally, but as a resource, as the one who's going to help you. That in your times of trouble, you're going to turn to Tzor for support. But look at this. This is just an image of a nation that has sold itself to the highest bidder. And even in the end, even when they're brought back, that's going to be their identity. It's an image of disgrace. If you think of the end of Zechariah, in Perek Yedaled, right, Zechariah depicts this future time after Armageddon and all the nations coming to the temple, coming to the Beis HaMikdash, right, and everybody has to come celebrate. And at the end he says, "V'lo yeknani od b'beit Hashem," right? No longer shall there be a merchant in the house of God. We explained last time the etymology of Kanani as merchant. As opposed to Canaanite, and how the genealogy connects that, but the statement of there will be no more merchants in the house of God, right? The Christians latched on to that, right? They took that in the money changers in the temple, but you know, like every other idea of theirs, it had a source. It's Zechariah saying and Yeshaya saying that that trade is essentially an act of selling yourself, and therefore is not to be what the Jews respect. They should not look to them as their model. I realize that if someone wasn't here like last week, that a lot of this is probably a little too quick. But you caught the audio? Okay.
But I don't understand. So this is really a condemnation of doing this. It sounds like the progressives in the U.S. Like, is it such a... Do we consider it a negative?
So
right.
So Yeshaya seems to view it as a soulless type of activity, one in which they're really selling themselves as opposed to selling the items. Part of it is the arrogance that Yechezkel, you know, highlights. I think that's a piece of it. But I also think this fits with what we saw previously in terms of Yeshaya's approach to military activity, right? Yeshaya was not against the Jews defending Yerushalayim. He was against forgetting the one who created the city and the, really the one, capital O, who is defending it. It's when you start to rely on this and look to this as somehow valuable and meritorious in its own right and something to be respected in its own right that Yeshaya feels it needs to take it down a peg and to say, let's not forget, these are people who are marketing themselves.
So it's like a blind condemnation on trade,
on business. But no, it's not. It's how they do
it. On relying on it. On relying on it, respecting it. Right. It's a tool. And it shouldn't be viewed as something more than that. Yeah. Yes, and that was the theme in the whole section, absolutely. Which is why it makes sense that you see at the end this idea that in the end their product will be dedicated to God. Right? That's the ending.
Even if they rely on God, they people have to do the defending.
Right. And that's fine, but that has to be the attitude of I'm relying on God and these are the steps I have to take. Interesting. So the idea would be that it is holy to God and therefore off limits. If you use it for yourself, then you're.
Later on, you said that they're going to be. They do send to the Beit HaMikdash because of their.
So that's the question: is what? How do we read this? Right. So three different approaches to this last section. Take a look on your sheet, please, at number 6. Abarbanel, remember that Abarbanel was the one who said that Sor's destruction is going to come at the hands of the Assyrians, which means that their downfall is in the Assyrian invasion, and their 70-year resurrection, so to speak, is before the first Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. Sor is going to be back. So Abarbanel says in number 6, Vishaliyot Sor v'Yerushalayim me'oivei Sancheirev, since both Sor and Jerusalem are enemies of Sancheirev, hayu ohavim zeh lazeh, they loved each other. That may be, you know, ohav, not quite love, but they're allies at any rate. And Sor sent merchandise and gifts to the house of Hashem. In other words, as Abarbanel reads it, it's tshuva. They are going to support the Beit HaMikdash. That's Abarbanel's read. Ibn Ezra also sees it as willing, but he has a different time frame, because Ibn Ezra believed that the whole thing was their downfall at the hands of the Babylonians. So he says, Lioshvim lefnei Hashem, they're going to send their gifts to those who sit before God. Heim golos Yerushalayim b'shuvam b'mei Koresh. That's going to be in the time of Cyrus, when Cyrus says everybody has to pony up money so that the Jews can come back and build the Beit HaMikdash, that Sor is going to be part of that campaign. That's their 70-year exile is our 70-year exile. And that's the way that Ibn Ezra reads it. Rashi, though, has a different take. Rashi says, no, this isn't about them becoming good guys. Asidim tzadikim lavozo suck shiavo melech hamashiach. The tzaddikim are going to take from Sor, and therefore it will be Kodesh Lashem. In the time of Mashiach, their property is going to become property of the Beis HaMikdash, but not willingly. That's the way that Rashi reads it. So you have three different takes, really two different takes, but one is Abarbanel ibn Ezra, who say that Sor is going to do this willingly. It's only a debate about when. And then there's Rashi, who says, no, this is not going to be a willing thing. If you see the top of the second side, I gave you my questions for review. Which, again, as I said when I introduced this concept, you're not being graded, and I'm not asking you to send them in. But if you want to write up an answer and send it to me, I will still not grade it, but I will tell you if you got what we were trying to say. But we talked about when Sor was our ally, right? Going back to earlier within their relationship with us, as well as our enemies. We noted Amos, Yoel, and Yechezkel, who speak of Sor's downfall. And we talked about their descriptions of the sin of Tzor as being arrogance, as being betrayal, and how that led some of the commentators to see that in Yeshaya here as well, even though Yeshaya does not say anything about what they've done wrong. The foreseen downfall of Tzor, and the debate, is that at the hands of the Assyrians, is that at the hands of the Babylonians? The most commentators think it's Babylonians, Abarbanel saying, sorry, that's not what's going on, it's the Assyrians. We had that envelope structure in the first part of the Perek that really highlights the idea that the key message is all this is coming from Hashem, because that's in the middle of the envelope. And then the theme is the downfall of those who have been financially successful, and the question of when does their product return and how is what we just discussed. So that's just a way to sort of capture what we did here. I then gave you also just a table. I felt like it's worthwhile, even if I don't put any details. We've now finished that unit, right? This was the third unit. The first unit was the messages to Uzziyahu. The second was the messages to Ahaz, telling him not to go along with the Northern Alliance and not to join the Assyrians either. That didn't work, but, we're going to try. And then this third unit is the message of the downfall of 10 nations or entities. So we had Babylon, who actually showed up twice. We had the Plishtim getting that little bit because they joined the Syro-Ephraimite alliance. We had Moab and the statement about the refugees, right? They should shelter our refugees, and Yeshaya crying for Moab. You had Aram and Yisrael, that northern alliance, disintegrating in betrayal among themselves. You had the business of Egypt. Then you had, again, the repeat of Bavel, although Barbanel thought it wasn't about their downfall, now it's about their invasion. You had Duma, who most understood to be Edom, as opposed to being Arab. And then you had Yishmael as a separate one, and you had a Barbanel with his praise of Yishmael for taking in travelers. Then you had Yehuda for their sins, and Shevna highlighted for his arrogant use of his position in Yerushalayim for himself, before finally coming to Tzor at the end. We've done a circuit of the region. I don't think that he left anybody out. But we noted one thing that is important to remember is that my gut would have been, seeing a section like this, where it's coming in the book, that is all about the downfall at the hands of the Assyrians. But it was clear in some of the prophecies that it's not talking about something that's going to happen at the hands of the Assyrians. I mean, Babel is the perfect example. Babel hasn't even risen yet. It's certainly not describing their fall at the hands of Assyria. So also worth noting. Okay. I'm not going to ask if it's clear, but I'm not going to ask if we move on. But I hope that we got something out of that.